You're listening to Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're talking about teaching with UX expert and educator Leslie Jensen Inman. I'm your host, Leia Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
Today's episode is sponsored by Visual Chefs, a versatile web development agency with expertise in content management system and custom web application development. Through partnerships with designers, agencies, and organizations, Visual Chefs propels the web forward. Visit visualchefs.com to learn more.
Before we dive into today's topic, Leia and I want to give a huge thank you to our listeners for nominating Control Click for the Net Awards.
We are incredibly honored and excited to be up for Podcast of the Year for the third time.
We're like Susan Lucci.
I know, exactly. It means we're still doing something right, hopefully, even after almost 4 years of podcasting.
Voting is open until mid-July, and we would love your vote. We'll have the link in our show notes. Now let's get to the business at hand. Today, we're talking about teaching, specifically teaching UX design, and our special guest is Dr. Leslie Jensen Inman. Leslie is a designer, speaker, author, and educator. She is also co-founder of CenterCenter, a user experience design school that is the first and only of its kind, a bricks-and-mortar school offering a 2-year full-time program in UX design. Welcome to the show, Leslie. We're excited to talk with you.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here with you all today.
Awesome. So Leslie, can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Sure. Let's see. I live in Chattanooga, Tennessee, which is really beautiful. If you haven't visited here, it's a great place to visit, a great place to live. And we do have the fastest internet access in the Western Hemisphere.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. You guys have that Google Fiber, isn't it?
No, actually we had, so ours is from our local municipality. So it's Ooh. Our electric power board. It was really forward thinking and put this into play way before Google had their fiber. And actually, Google came and visited Chattanooga to find out how we were doing it so they could learn from what we were doing so that they could do it in other cities.
That's
really cool. Yeah, I think almost never hear about things like that.
It's pretty unexpected. You know, a lot of people don't think of the Southeast as that progressive, but Chattanooga is just this wonderful place where we are. And it's very tech and innovated. Our mayor says the word innovation quite a lot. We're in an innovation district. We're really working on bringing people together to solve really tough problems and using technology to do that as well.
Wow, that's exciting. That sounds like a great town.
It's so nice. And live on top of a mountain and there's birds and bunnies outside, you know, so it's like I've got 1 gig up, 1 gig down to the house.
Wow.
And then I get to see, yeah, and I live on a mountain. It's pretty amazing.
I mean, that sounds great. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about how that was part of the reason why CenterCenter is situated where you are as well. But before we jump right into that, let's start with the basics. How did you start working on the web?
So I started really with design, and I started in print design. There wasn't all that much in a lot of ways in the web that we know it today. I remember building things in tables and using spacer GIFs and flash sites. You know, all the things that we would really look at as pretty big no-nos today, but it was the only way we could do things, or the way that we could do things and actually have some design control. So I got started, I don't know, back design. My mom would tell you that I've been designing or thinking as a designer since I was at least 5, when I was obsessed with typography. And my poor mom, she'd have to go and buy like extra pads of paper. Because I would just, when I was 5, I would just practice my letter forms over and over and over and over and over again. Yeah. Then I would have to get the letters perfectly spaced. And my mom, in the last few years, she's like, oh, I get it now. You were kerning.
That's awesome.
So it was pretty neat. So I've been doing that. You know, that's kind of just been part of me as far as long as I can remember. And then moved into the web. I was always sort of around it. My husband, Sean Inman, he was really instrumental in creating a lot of things for the web back in the, I don't know, I feel like it's like the Wild Westies when we didn't have, you know, we only had, you know, web safe colors and web safe fonts. And we wouldn't do this today in the same way, of course. But back then, he created something called Inman Flash Replacement that gave you control over headline type, doing some pretty fancy stuff. And I saw what he was doing, and I was a little bit afraid in some ways to get into the web and do a little bit less print, just because he and I are extremely competitive. And, you know, it was nice to be in similar spaces, but different enough that we weren't in the same space. But then it just made, it was just clear that this was just another medium. It was another tool. And I needed to know more. I needed to get my hands dirty with it, to learn it myself. And it was great because he was there to be helpful in understanding, well, how do you do this? And always seeing him push himself was really inspirational. And we're able to collaborate on all kinds of things together. And it's just been, it's been really great. It's nice to have another designer in the house that gets your obsession with getting the details right.
Yeah, I know what you mean. My boyfriend and I are very much the same way. And I'm so lucky because I run my mouth nonstop about the details of a given project. And he listens, and not just, you know, passively, actively listens.
It's really nice. And Sean and I, we think in September it might be 16 years together. And so,
wow, congrats.
Thank you. And it's just, it's been, you know, our design skills have grown. And I think, you know, throughout the years, of course, as they do if you're practicing, but it's also because we push each other a lot. Right. And so it's just a really neat thing. And if you can have somebody in your life, if it's a spouse or if it's, you know, a really good friend, really good colleague, it's just really helpful to have people around you that get you and want to help you push yourself even further than you think you can.
So speaking of pushing yourself, is that what got you involved in education? Specifically web education?
Yes, it's sort of I was at a crossroads. I was living in Baltimore, Maryland, and I had just done a bunch of design work for a film, a Nicole Kidman and Daniel Craig film called The Invasion. And so I did all the on-set graphics for the whole film.
Cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. But it was also really insane. I was, as a designer, I was on call 24 hours a day.
Ooh.
Yeah. And some days it was like, okay, well, we changed the scene and now we need this graphic and it needs to be on set, like designed and on set and printed and gotten onto set within 15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And what?
Yeah. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of graphics within just a couple of months. And what I realized is I totally could do it. My confidence as a designer went up because I'm like, wow, I'm really making this happen. I can work through having 102 degree fever and being under my desk with like an emergency blanket and then get up and design and go back to that. But I decided that wasn't quite what I wanted to do. And I felt like, you know, I was doing good work, but I wanted to do more. And I've always been extremely service-minded. I've been a Girl Scout my entire life, well, since first grade, because they didn't have daisies back then. And I'm still a lifetime member of Girl Scouts. And my mom really instilled a very good sense of service, that part of what we're put here on Earth to do is to give back to our communities. And my grandfather instilled that in me, too. And so I felt like teaching, I felt this calling, but I figured, you know, this probably won't happen, I don't know, until like I'm 60, you know, like this is one of those things where you're just like, well, I'll probably just be in the profession and I'll just keep my professional practice. But then Sean spoke at a conference in Chattanooga and we fell in love with the city. And that was 2005. And we were so in love with Chattanooga that we decided, like Sean said to me, we were given a tour by somebody and he said, we're going to move here, aren't we? And I said, yeah, I think so. And then we moved here. And then when the people at UTC found out, which is the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, found out that I was moving here, they asked me to apply for a lecture position at the university. And it was really interesting because I was interviewed by the community, not just the other academics. And so I had to, because my position was being funded by community foundations here. And my position was really connected with the community. So it seemed like a perfect fit, and it was. And so that position turned into actually, instead of a one-year lecturer position, it turned into me being at the university for 5 years as an assistant professor. And when I realized there's only so far I could take things within what I knew my students needed, that's really when I realized I needed to step away and figure out how to bring education in a way that really makes sense to students to be able to get real jobs in the industry, be completely industry ready. And so that's how I moved into creating Center with Jared Spool.
Well, before we get to Center, what do you feel like was, I don't know if missing is the right word, but what wasn't connecting right in traditional education of web industry skills that didn't necessarily get you ready for the job?
So I was teaching within an art department. And the focus really was on creating more of art, even though it was a design program. And I'll say I had an amazing head of department and was given a lot of leeway. But I knew that to prepare students to be industry ready, called on resources and structure that doesn't really, that aren't really available in a traditional academic environment. Mm. So I had the best world I could have at a university setting, really supportive people and great students and, you know, all of the good things. But so a couple things happened. I taught a summer class and it was a 5-week course instead of a 15-week course, and the students and I met every day for like 4+ hours every day. Wow. And I realized the students were picking up the, you know, they were picking up HTML and CSS extremely way faster than meeting Tuesdays and Thursdays for 2.5 or 3 hours. Because between Thursday and Tuesday, that is a lot of dates.
Yeah.
To not really be practicing those skills with somebody that knows what they're doing.
Right.
And so they can go and they would go off and do their own work from Thursday to Tuesday. But if they went down a bad path, or like a path that was really frustrating, or, you know, there was just no one there because the resources aren't there to have me to be able to help to support the students learning in that way, you know, they could go, you know, 5 days without me knowing something was really off. And that's really hard when, and it's not very sustainable. It's not very effective learning.
I feel like that puts almost so much impetus to the student to be so aware of what their limits are. Because, you know, back when I was teaching as well, I was thinking like, well, why didn't they just ask me when they were having a problem? The thing is, part of being a student is like, you're trying to like work through the problem to learn. But if you're not in between to actually intervene and be like, okay, you don't have to bang your head for 8 hours at this one problem. Here's the direction you should go. Now continue. Right? Like, we don't have that when you just have like that 1 4-hour class or 2 4-hour classes twice a week.
Absolutely. And you just, when you're starting off, you don't know what you don't know. You're in that learning stage of unconscious incompetence. You don't know that you don't know these things, and you don't even know where, you know, you don't know what word to look up, keywords to Google. And you just need to, I think a lot of times you need to be around other people to help you learn, and especially more effectively, more efficiently, quicker. And so that was one of the things I think a traditional academic environment doesn't really allow for in most cases. And there's always exceptions, but I haven't really found that many. And I can't actually think of an example to give you right now. But then the other thing I found out is my students would, there's a certain class, it was a professional practices course. And what I did with the students is I had them work with local nonprofits and work on real projects. So, for example, there's this project that we did called Take Root. It was a tree planting initiative for downtown Chattanooga. This was all the way back in 2008. And the students came up with the logo, they came up with all the design stuff, and they worked on the website. It was more than just web, because I was in a graphic design department where students were learning all types of visual design as well. And so they created these materials. They were actually the first people to donate to the tree planting fund, the first ones to plant a tree. And what I realized is the students, they had a real client. They saw the real outcomes of their work. So the students, they helped raise the money to get a city forester a second position in the government here. They employed somebody. They helped that. And that is so powerful that a lot of those students from that group are still here in Chattanooga. A whole bunch of them run a design conference now together here in Chattanooga. And so I just feel like there's something so valuable to work on real projects, that it's not about the grade. It's about doing something meaningful, creating work that really has an influence on the people around you, and that you can see the results. And it's not just about trying to grade grub or get A's. You know, it's really about the design and affecting people's lives.
Yeah, I think it's that kind of seed of passion that can get instilled in someone that makes them not only proficient at what they do, but just really enthusiastic about what they do. I think it's, for me and Leah, it's why we choose the kind of clients we choose to work with, because we really care about their successes. It's more than, you know, it's the business is always a priority, but it's, we feel like we're helping them make something that's valuable for their community. And I don't know, it's why I love what I do. And I think it's amazing to be able to instill that in your early part of your learning of this field. That was not my experience. My experience was trying to teach myself stuff, signing up for the ad hoc classes here and there, trying to get what I could out of it, but not really seeing the big picture of right. what it could mean that I see now, you know, 20 years into it.
Yeah, I feel like context sometimes is missing with a lot of not just web education, but just general education itself. It's like drilling down into here's how you learn HTML, here's how Gestalt works and color, you know, theory works. But then when you actually put a real client and real project and real context and real people, then I feel like the learning tools and everything like that, it actually sticks because now there's an actual association to why you're even learning these skill sets.
That's so true. There is a ton of learning theory about just that. It's basically when you apply theory, then that's when you actually learn. You know, we learn by doing. We're humans that like when we do something, that what we've done sticks better than if someone just talks at us about something. But if you learn a little bit of theory and you can apply the theory, that's even stronger. So sometimes, you know, traditional academic environment, people might call someone like me who really focuses on, let's get the application right, let's understand the greater context. A lot of times you can be called vocational. And because a traditional academic environment, it depends on what kind of university you're going to, but it's a liberal arts school. There's a lot of focus on learning how to think critically. And thinking critically is great, although I think we're using these words without much meaning right now. But it's more, it's how can you take that ability and apply it to your work so that you can have a really meaningful career, a great job, to be able to be sustainable. It drove me crazy. I believe that students should be able to graduate and have really great careers and have jobs right away. And then I'm not talking like senior position. I'm not like talking about being the next polisher, Johnny Ives. You know, I'm talking about to go out and to be a junior designer, to learn from people that know more than you, to be humble and understand you have so much else to learn, but to be willing to try and learn new things, to do new things, to be a team player, to understand what it's like to collaborate with other people. And a lot of traditional academic environments, you know, it's cheating if you work with somebody else. But my gosh, right. We work together all the time.
You mentioned you started Center-Centered with Jared Spool, and I'm gathering it's because you saw a new way to do these things where you saw that it wasn't exactly working. So can you expand on like why you started, why you partnered with Jared? You know, I'm assuming Chattanooga being a great town was also part of getting that established.
Yeah. So, I mean, it just makes sense if you're going to create a user experience design school to do it with one of the people that created really and shaped the field. And so every day I'm honored to have Jared as my co-founder. And it's so interesting. We come at things completely differently and we end up with very similar, if not the same solutions to things, which is fun. He comes from it where his clients that he was working with, and he works with a lot of big name clients, they were and still are unable to hire really great design talent, especially user experience talent. It's just because there's just not enough talent. There's a lot of really talented people out there, but it's not enough to fill the need. And we're seeing an increased need for this as people start to understand that design isn't just about making things pretty. It's about making things work and being useful and being in a way that really allows for better business decisions and better business outcomes. And so he was very frustrated that he couldn't help his clients find the talent they needed. And I was really frustrated because I wanted students to learn the things that they needed to learn to be hireable for the types of clients that Jared has. And so when I resigned from the university before I knew exactly what I was going to do, because I know my skill set, I knew I could find or create what I needed to. But I kind of left myself open to opportunities. I wrote a blog post, and of course, I tweeted about that. And within 4 minutes of me tweeting, like, hey, I've resigned, Jared direct messaged me and said, we need to talk. And as soon as he did that, we started talking, and we haven't stopped talking since. We haven't stopped listening either. We really have just been working so hard together to create this school, this better kind of learning environment. And it's really because we see the potential of what education can be. And we see the need. And we know that people are hungry for this kind of education. Our student applicants are amazing. And they want this so bad. And they want a program that really dives deep into the very different areas of user experience. And they want something that's more than, you know, a 10-week program. They want something that's more than them reading books and learning on their own. They really want to be engaged with the community in a much deeper way and learn from very experienced people. And so to create this program, the first thing we did was actually go and interview a whole bunch of hiring managers from these big kind of companies. And we asked them, you know, what makes a good user experience designer? And then what's the best? What separates that a good person from the best? And it turns out every single person answered soft skills, like, or a version of soft skills. So it's communication, it's facilitation. So our program is very heavily based on learning how to be a really great professional and a great communicator, great facilitator.
I think that's very important. Like, a lot of people always focus on the hard skills. You know, you have to learn code, you have to learn like design and typography and all those kind of things. But if you don't know how to communicate your ideas to others in a way that convinces them that your idea is how you should move forward, then there's a problem.
Or to be able, like Leslie alluded to, be able to listen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's also an incredibly important skill, to be open to other ideas and thoughts that may contradict your own. So can you talk a little bit more about the program? It's actually, before you do that, I just have a question. Why Center Center? And for our listeners, it's Center, C-E-N-T-E-R, Center, C-E-N-T-R-E. So why that name?
So there's a couple of different reasons. We're basically, so user experience design often sits at the center of business. We might not think of it that way, but it is a place where money decisions are being made, those kind of business decisions, design, development. You've got analytics coming into it and copywriting. There's all these things, and UX sits in the center. So we wanted to be a center of things that are in the center. And we are committed to being downtown in Chattanooga and in the city center. We are in the downtown city center, which is a really different kind of way to approach things in Chattanooga. We wanted our students to be around business professionals. Our landlords are the Chamber of Commerce, and we have the entire fourth floor of the Chamber of Commerce building here in Chattanooga. And it's pretty neat because you walk in on any given day and there's a dignitary or the governor, you know, there's business people, and you get a sense that, yes, I better dress professionally. I better understand what it's like to walk professionally and everything.
It almost sounds immersive.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the entire program is completely immersive. It's 75% project-based. It's all the learning by doing stuff.
So how does what makes your program effective? How did you put together the curriculum and decide how the program should proceed? Because it's a 2-year full-time program. That's a lot of, I imagine, work to get a curriculum established even before you get the students.
You are so right. It is so much work. There's often days I kind of, I'm so glad I didn't know all the things I didn't know.
Right.
Before getting into this, because I don't know. I think if I had known and chose to do this, it would have been a little crazy. But it's really interesting. So we've had to work with the state of Tennessee. We are authorized by the state of Tennessee, the Tennessee Higher Education Commission. And that's such an interesting ongoing process. And because we're so different, I give them a lot of credit for really working with us to figure out what we're doing in a way that makes sense with the way they have to approve things, because we're not traditional in any kind of way. So it's just taking a lot of work up front, and that's okay. Our student, the curriculum is really killer. So we have full-time facilitators, Thomas Mashad and Jess Ivins, and they, along with me, have been really working on the curriculum. And we actually go through an extremely intensive process. And the book name might be just slipping my mind. I think it's Creating
Significant Learning Experiences.
Thank you. Yes. I already sent you the name of the book.
Yes.
It just slipped my mind, and I realized I have it at home and not in the office, so I couldn't just quickly look at my bookshelf. So that book is amazing, but it is created for traditional college environments, but we've been able to adapt it and really push it beyond what the author, I think, had intended. And we are using it as a framework to build out our curriculum. And every course, if you could see the worksheets, and one day I think we're going to hope to share that information, but the worksheets to get to just figuring out, well, what are the learning outcomes? And we constantly answer ourselves the question, what do we want students to know 2 years after they graduate? Mm-hmm. That's a really different way to teach. When you're thinking, what is the information you really want them to retain versus, you know, maybe in a traditional environment, it'd be like, well, what is the information we need to test on? We don't believe in that kind of assessment in the same way. We do a lot of reflection for students to see what they're learning. And we believe that assessments themselves should be opportunities for learning. So if we gave a test, the reason we would be giving a test was because we think it would be an opportunity for the students to learn more, not to cram and do well on a test, but to actually learn something that they could use 2 years down the line. And as you might imagine, we have not planned for any, if at all, not really any test at this point. Now that might change, but it would only change if it serves the students and their learning.
So I'm curious, you know, since we're talking about just in general assessments, what do you think makes a good teacher for the web industry?
Somebody that loves to learn.
Very good. Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. Yeah.
So then what makes a good student?
Somebody that loves to learn. That's actually what we're looking for. So our student applicants, we're looking for tenacious, gritty, lifelong learners. They don't actually have to have any background in code or design. But we ask them questions like, tell me a really significant learning experience. Sometime you taught yourself how to do something that you didn't know how to do. Tell us about that experience. And so that could be rebuilding a car engine, learning construction. It could be learning how to cook. There's all these different things. And those are perfectly great, valid answers because they're the same kind of skills that it takes to learn how to build a website, to learn how to design well, but they're just applied in a different way. So we're looking at a history of somebody's learning.
So do you kind of also self-select then for motivation? Because I do find that, because in my own experience of teaching, just seeing someone who's actually just is interested in the subject versus someone who's just, this is an option that I have to take, so I'm just studying or whatever, like has a total dramatic difference in terms of the outcomes for that particular student. Like I remember one girl emailing me before she took my course. She was really nervous because she never coded in her life. She didn't know any HTML whatsoever, but she liked it. Like once she started learning, I could tell that she liked it. And then by the end of the course, she was like testing media queries and all those things, advanced things that none of her other students were as motivated, were even trying, you know, at all. And not saying that she was a perfect coder at the end, but she wanted to even try.
Yes. I mean, motivation plays a huge part in it. Now, that's something that's harder to assess for, in an interview process, but you do get a sense of it. But it comes back again to finding out, do they have a history of being motivated? So somebody can fake an answer in an interview, but if I go and I ask them specific questions about the time that they've taught themselves something and how did they come to a time in that process where it was really frustrating? And almost everyone says yes, because that's actually part of learning something new. And well, how'd you work through that part? And those answers to those kind of questions are so telling. And then the other thing we do is we actually call references and have very in-depth reference checks. So we're not just taking letter references. We actually go through a process and we check the references and we make sure that what the applicant's saying lines up with what the reference is saying as well. And you can find out a lot about somebody's motivation by asking some good questions with the reference.
So you've mentioned that it's important in the application or selection process for a student to understand how they have taught themselves something in the past. So I'm curious, what do you think obviously being a learner is important, but what's the benefit of pursuing a formal education versus continuing with that self-teaching?
And I think both are valid paths. And even if you have formal education, let's face it, in our fields, you've got to keep being a self-learner. Otherwise, you're going to be left behind. I think the difference for us at Center Center is the way our courses are structured. We bring in industry experts to teach industry grade workshops every 3 weeks for 2 days at a time. And we have partner companies that come in. There's partner company mentors that come in during those workshops and learn with the students. And also they're scouting students. They're also mentoring students. So really with our program, the students are building relationships over 2 years that will, as long as the students, you know, work hard and that they're good people and they're good at collaborating, all those things we know that make good team members, make good employees, they're going to be extremely hireable. And these people from the partner companies will be able to, both them and the students will know what they're getting into before extending an invitation to be hired and or accepting one. They've already know like what it's like to work with that specific team because they've worked on real projects with them before. And so they're getting this access to like all the time, access to not only the facilitators, which are full-time faculty who are experts in this in the different UX areas. They're getting access to industry experts, like the top of the pop of people in our field, the people writing the books and the people at the conferences. Those are who we're bringing in. They get access to the partner companies and the mentors and real projects. It's just like a different level of access. And they're learning in a really safe environment how to be better professionals. And I don't think a lot of junior people are getting that level of support right now in a professional setting, because the senior people are so overwhelmed because there's such a crunch for talent that it's really hard to level up your junior folks when you're just trying to keep your head above water.
Wow, it sounds like that is the program I was looking for back in 2000 and couldn't find anywhere. You know, when I knew I wanted more formal education for myself, I couldn't find it. Like, I couldn't find the kind of program I wanted. I had to do, like, you know, professional development where you get like a certificate at the end and it's just a couple hours after work. Oh gosh, to go back in time.
You don't even have to go back in time, like traditional curriculums and stuff like that. It's just not as immersive. And I know, for example, in the university that I taught at, they did have like a professional lecture series where they did try to get one or a couple like professional people to talk about the industry and stuff. But then that's just a lecture. They're not actually doing immersive discussions or having an interaction with the students to actually even know if they know what they're talking about or see their processes or anything like that. It's just always like, here's an hour or two of your time to talk to someone in the industry. Now see you in several months, you know, or never, right?
Yeah, ours is really a program that's about building long-term relationships, which to me, it's funny. I think sometimes I'm building the program I wanted when I was a student. And I think I'm also building the program I wanted as a teacher, but it's not really about me, but it's kind of, I'm like, oh, this would be so fun. And then I go, oh, wait, I get to go to the industry expert workshops. This is going to be so much fun. And it's really meeting the needs of both the students as learners and their lifelong learning. But it's also meeting the needs of the hiring managers, which then again serves the students because the students can go through the program and get really meaningful, good jobs and be on a path to a very nice career.
It's incredible. I'm curious, do you have any thoughts about more along the lines of self-teaching, but really through like an online curriculum, like a Treehouse or Skillshare? Do you feel like those are something that are, you know, effective for certain types of people, or that they should be supplemented for this, the one-on-one kind of experience that you get with other people collaborating and seeing how businesses work?
I think like the Treehouse is great. And I used it when I was at the university. We plan to use it with our students supplementing their skills. It just, to me, it depends on the student, the way they best retain information. It also, or the learner, it doesn't have to be an actual student, maybe student of life. It depends on the topic. So I think there's certain things that are way easier to learn online than, like, it's very hard to teach someone soft skills and how to collaborate with a team in an online setting that's a video series. You know, how do you learn how to work with a team? Well, you work with a team, you mess up some, you hopefully have, you know, with our students, they'll have the facilitator say, hey, you know, when you do this thing, it's not that effective. Maybe next time try this other thing. And they've got this guided mentor with them, where you don't have that in an online series. But to learn something like HTML, CSS, different kinds of coding and those kind of skills, those tech skills, I think Treehouse and some other programs, all you can learn is really great for some things as well. They do a lot more of the UX related skills that are ones I think you can actually pick up in a 90 minute kind of workshop presentation format. I don't think all skills are created equal, and I don't think we learn them the same way. I think a lot of it, it's best if you can learn it by doing, but I think some of the tech skills you can learn online and you can learn in person. I think the soft skills are really difficult to learn online.
So you, Center tackles learning for its adults, really. But what do you think about that sort of education earlier, like in high school? Or is it something that needs a more thorough approach than in like an option class?
So if you mean learning by doing, that I think should be started like in preschool. That should be started really early. I think actually what we're doing here would translate very nicely K through 12, but our current systems, I don't think, have the resources to support it. And just to be able to support the teachers, like, we have really great teachers all around us, and we've got systems that don't really provide the best opportunities for them and for their students. So if I start, I realize I just started getting sad, because I feel like if we could just fix it all, it'd be great, but it's not that way. But I start thinking about these programs. There's a new program in Chattanooga that's starting up that's this, it's a forest school and it's for kindergartners, and they learn by doing stuff outside all day. And their like motto is something like, there's no bad weather, there's only bad gear. As long as it's not lightning, the kids are outside learning, like, okay, like, water with dirt equals mud. What is that about? You know, and they're learning life and they're learning skills, and they're not stuck in a four-room classroom, sitting in a table, told to be like still. Can you imagine?
Right.
Not having, so most of the schools are taking away recess these days. And then it's like, okay, all the kids have ADHD. And I'm like, ADHD is a real thing. But if every single kid's got it, maybe it's us as adults that have something wrong with us. You know, let's learn by doing. Let's give them opportunities to really experience life in a greater context than what's in a classroom. I really think our community should be the classrooms.
I do feel like, though, with this particular question, I'm more curious. I know that as an adult now, I feel like it's kind of insane that high school students are almost forced to decide what to do at 17, 18 years old as a career, so they have a post-secondary option. So how do we get people to even understand what user experience is? Because I know when I was in high school, it's just, quote, web design, you know. But user experience, as we spoke about thoroughly through this episode, is, you know, a lot more than just that. Say I was just like a new 18-year-old graduate. Is something like Center even within my radar? Or would it be something that you'd discover after you've done a different post-secondary option, like university, let's say, or you've just lived your life a little bit longer?
It's interesting. The reason it's interesting, we have these conversations all the time here. We've been trying to figure out, how do we let people know in the community? Because we can start local and then figure out things that work and share those kind of things with other people. Do we go into high school classrooms? So that's what we've been doing, middle school and high school. Different team members have been talking with different schools. We've got a girls preparatory school here. GPS is really wonderful. And we're really into trying to make a more diverse user experience world. And so we're very happy to go into schools that maybe are underserved, and maybe that have more women. And so that's where we've been starting, is talking with high school students. We were also talking with parents and people at different kinds of churches. Like, there's all kinds of different ways to get involved in the community, just sort of share what user experience is, and that you can come from almost any background and get into it. You know, if you're more interested in writing, there's a place for you in UX. If you're more interested in human psychology, there's a place for you. And people sometimes, if they go to university, sometimes they don't know what to do with their degree. We were just talking with another college in the area, and they produce really great biology students. But some of their biology students, turned out, they don't really want to go on to be vets or medical doctors. And so they were saying to us, you know, we think our students would be a really great fit for your program, because there's so much, you know, informatics that go on within biology. You know, if you have the domain knowledge of biology and then you know UX, I mean, I think right now you could pretty much write your ticket. And so these are the kind of things, it's just having conversations. And I don't think there's a magic silver bullet to this. I think it's all of our responsibilities to reach back to the community, share what we know, let younger people and people that might be like underserved or they don't know what options exist, and let them know about our careers.
So as we near the end of this episode, I wanted to get some of your thoughts on resources. For example, what would you say are some of the best resources for learning? You shared a few books that you used when crafting your curriculum for Center, and I guess, are those the kind of things that are relevant to someone who's trying to become a better learner, or are those more relevant for people who are trying to help people learn?
The ones that I've shared, those ones are more helpful to people that are like educators or teachers. Somebody's thinking about the learning process for somebody else to learn. For learners, I think, you know, we still have such active people. I know blogging kind of died for a while, but I think it's coming back, or at least, I don't know, you know, articles like through Medium. Is. Yeah, it feels. And podcasts, oh my gosh, that's how I learned so much.
Hi.
Yeah. I listen to you all the time, and I'm just like,
really?
Yeah, of course. And I got inspired the other day by Denise, and I'm like, okay. That's right. You know, I got, so the, I was cooking. That's what I was doing. I was cooking and listening, and it was like so perfect. And so the, to me, those are the kind of ways, and podcasts for me really work right now with my life, because I can cook and listen to it, or I can be on a walk, or, you know, on the elliptical or whatever. And I get this good information in my head, but I'm not having to read at the same time, because I love reading, but I read so much that my eyes start hurting. So podcasts are a nice break. Mm-hmm. It's also nice just to hear people's voices. You know, it's the human aspect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think those are really great. And we've got so many podcasts going on in the different areas of our field. I love listening to yours, of course, and Hired with Cameron Malls, and got Unfinished Biz, and you've got, there's like, oh, I listen to Manager Tools. If you want to learn how to be an excellent manager or an excellent employee, there's this awesome resource. It's Manager Tools, and they have Career Tools. And those are just the, by far some of the best podcasts out there on how to be a really great professional. And we refer to them all the time at Center Center. And that is probably the, one of the biggest resources. And they're great even if you're starting out in your career. It'll really tell you, how do you interview? How do you ask for vacation? Like all these things that you think somebody would tell you how to do, but nobody.
They never do.
Yeah, no, totally.
I just listened to two of them. It was like how to go on vacation.
Oh, God. We need to follow that advice. We're still figuring that out.
Yeah. I think I shocked the team today when I told them that I was actually going to go on vacation. I was going to have my email forward to somebody else that wasn't me. They're like, I think that's a good idea, Leslie. Okay.
So what advice would you give someone who would like to teach someone else about the web?
Just get started.
Right.
Don't try to be perfect. What is it? Perfect is the enemy of the good kind of thing. The perfection in this, in teaching this. You, every time you help somebody else learn something, you will learn how much you don't know.
Right.
Don't let that scare you. It's okay. It's okay for someone else to know that you don't know everything.
Right.
9 out of 10 times, maybe even more. You know, it's our team, they really know that Jared and I are still learning things. And we share that every day in our stand-ups. We have a fifth question that says, what's the most important thing you learned today? And how may that change your approach in the future? And every day, Jared and I share with the team, like, I didn't know this yesterday, but now I do. And this is how it's going to affect things, I think, in the future. And I think setting that culture is just so important. And just having that mindset of always, it's okay not to know everything. It's about learning how to actually find what you need to know and be resourceful. And you teach that.
I feel like that's so true. I think Leigh and I are experiencing it firsthand right now because we have an intern and we're trying. I mean, we kind of created our own little curriculum for her for a real world project and are trying to bring her through the various stages. And I feel like the most meaningful conversations I have with her are the ones where I tell her that she doesn't have to be perfect. And I try and tell her how this is a process of learning and look at how Leigh and I are operating and that we're still learning and just trying to let her know that it's not perfection that she should be seeking or that we're seeking from her. I love it when she learns something, you know, like a hard skill, something really practical. Mm-hmm. But what really matters most to me is when she's feeling amazing about what she's learning.
Yeah. No, like when she's reviewing a bunch of websites right now, and then I just directed her to like other perspectives while she's reviewing it. And she was so excited when I pointed like, okay, what did you think about this? So I wasn't even telling her what to do or what I already saw. I was just like, have you considered this? And then it changed her perspective of that website, you know, completely.
She realized that things really aren't black and white. There's a lot of gray in this. There's no one right way for anything. So I feel like that's probably one of the most valuable things you can teach someone. And like you said, Leslie, learn yourself. So what kind of advice would you give to a budding UX professional? I mean, other than to apply for your school.
Yeah, I would say before doing that, figure out if UX is what you kind of want to do. Are you interested? That motivation aspect, you know, do some research. If you can, get to a meetup or a UX group or a UX book club. Start talking to UX professionals. You know, most of us are so willing to meet with somebody that's as professionally to have coffee for like a limited time. Could I meet with you for an hour? Could I buy you a cup of coffee and just ask you about your job? Right. And whenever anybody asks me that in a very professional way and I can make it work, I say yes, because that's part of my responsibility to help the next generation. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just, and people did that for me. And it's just so important to pay it forward. So I think that's really important. And just take a chance, get out there, meet more people, read, listen to podcasts, watch all, like so many videos now are free online too from the different conferences. Watch those and just get excited. See if this is what you want to do. And then continue to push your skills in whatever way that makes sense. If that's doing things online, if that's reading more books, is that doing some freelance? Although I think that's really tough when you're just starting out. I think you should always work with somebody that can mentor you. So if you're doing freelance, if you can find someone basically out mentor you, that's way better. Doing internships, trying to find some more formal education. I think those are ways that you can really get started.
Awesome. I feel like that actually answered our last question about best advice for students in general, too.
Well, excellent.
I feel very inspired and enthusiastic. Yes. I feel really excited for your students. I feel excited that what if this model becomes the standard in the future and we have this, we elevate how we educate within our industry. It's very exciting. I imagine this is really satisfying for you personally, Leslie.
It's the true sense of the word awesome. You know, it's just overwhelming. It's hard, but it's rewarding. And you've got an amazing team. And the student applicants are really, really strong. And it's a lot of fun and it's a lot of hard work. And I don't know, there's something wonderful when you can have both. It's hard work, so you know you're really working hard and it's rewarding. But it's also just, it's so good to understand that maybe what you're doing is helping the future. It's just, I guess I couldn't be more satisfied or more happy. I feel very, very fortunate to be where I am. I know I worked hard to be here, but it just, every day I have to remind myself those hard moments, like, Leslie, you are really lucky. This is the dream. Creating something that could not only affect our field and our industry, but this kind of education could work in others. Mm-hmm. And I just think we need people to be pushing learning in new ways. And it's so exciting.
Absolutely. I think that's a great note to end this episode. But before we finish up, we do have our rapid fire 10 questions. So our listeners can get to know you a bit better.
Excellent.
You ready, Leslie?
I'm so ready.
First question, Android or iOS?
iOS.
If you were stranded on a desert island and can only bring three things, what would you bring?
I want to bring the Enterprise, the next generation, and Sean. Just in case it's too far away to get Sean from the teleporter.
Oh my God, I love it.
Because then I'll have everything I need.
So I wonder if this answers the next question. What's your favorite TV show?
Okay, now that's hard. You know, I love TNG. I really do. And Jean-Luc Picard, I've had a crush on him since I was a kid. But I really, really, really love The West Wing.
Cool, very cool.
That's our second West Wing answer.
Oh, that other person must be really smart. I don't know. Sean calls it Gilmore Girls in Suits. He's way God. Too talky.
Oh my gosh, the dialogue. Yes, that makes total sense. So, Leslie, what's your favorite dessert?
Oh, anything really chocolatey. Like really, really, really like death by chocolate kind of chocolatey.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Huh. Okay, the first thought came into my mind. Oh, that's weird. I didn't think of that. All of a sudden, I felt like lawyer? But I have no idea why. Look, I think my dad wanted me to be a lawyer when I was a kid. He said I could talk my way in or out of most anything. But I don't know if that's actually true. It totally shocked me, that answer. Okay, I don't know. We'll go with that. Because it was the first thought that popped in my head.
What profession would you not like to try?
Ooh, accountant. Hmm. I'm trying to get used to numbers.
What's the latest article or blog post you read?
I just reviewed one that we're about to publish, actually. It was, so Jess Ivins wrote it. It's about being productive, productivity as a UX designer. Mm-hmm. I was really pleased with it. I'm very excited for it. By the time this airs, it'll be out.
Out
on Center on our blog. Awesome. Sorry, that is the last one I just read. And the other, like non-Center one, it was in the Chronicle of Higher Education, and it's about competency-based education. But it was more of a video than an actual article. But I can send you that link too.
Yeah, absolutely. So next question, if you could have a superpower, what would it be?
I have no idea. Let's see. I'd like to figure out a way to get the world better educated. I don't know. What would that be called? Like, not like better educated, not a bad way. Like
super teacher.
I want to be, yeah, super teacher and help people be, I want to help people be super learners. Because I, right. It's not really about me. It's about them.
What music do you like to work to?
None. I don't like any, because I'm almost always in meetings and we have tech-free meetings. So I don't like music on because I like to be able to hear the conversation. And when I'm not in meetings, I tend to be writing. So it's really hard for me to write with music. So none.
All right. Last question. Cats or dogs?
Neither. I'm highly allergic to both.
Oh, yeah, no. I remember that. I remember you telling me that.
Yeah. I think they're all cute from afar. But I'm always happy with a good dog or cat gift. So
nice. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us, Leslie.
Well, thank you all.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
Find me at Jensen Inman, one word, on Twitter, and also jenseninman.com. And you can always catch me through Center Center as well.
Thank you so much. It was so good to talk with you today.
Thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation.
We'd now like to thank our sponsors for this podcast, Visual Chefs and Pixel and Tonic.
And thanks to our partners, Arcus Tech, DevOT, and EE Insider.
We also want to thank our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Clickcast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you liked this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when our pal Anna Brown returns to the show to talk about using New Relic to diagnose performance issues with an Expression Engine site. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara.
And Emily Lewis.
Signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.